Chapter 38. Wounds. Spurts of fire flashed through the dark hallways of the White Tower, leaving trails of smoke that curled in the air, thick and pungent. People screamed and yelled and cursed. The walls shook as blasts took them. Chips and chunks of rock sprayed off weaves of air crafted for protection. There. Egwene noted a place where several black sisters were lobbing fire down the hallway. Evangeline was there. Egwene sent herself into the room next to the one where they were standing. She could hear them on the other side of the wall. She opened her hands and released a powerful blast of earth and fire directly at the wall, blowing it outward. The women beyond stumbled and fell, Evangeline collapsing, bloodied. The other woman was quick enough to send herself away. Egwene checked to see that Evangeline was dead. She was. Egwene nodded with satisfaction. Evangeline was one of those that she'd been most eager to find. Now, if she could only track down Katarina or Alviarin. Channeling, behind her, Egwene threw herself to the ground as a blast of fire sprayed over her head, Messana, black cloth, swirling about her. Egwene gritted her teeth and sent herself away. She didn't dare face the woman directly. Egwene appeared in a storage room not far away, then stumbled as a blast shook the area. She waved a hand, making a window in the door, and saw Amys charging past. The Wise One wore Cadinsor and carried spears. Her shoulder was bleeding and blackened. Another blast hit near her, but she vanished. That blast made the air outside swelter, melting Egwene's window and forcing her to step back. Saren's research had been correct. Despite the open battle, Messana had not fled or hid, as Mogadine might have. Perhaps she was confident, perhaps she was frightened. Likely she needed Egwene's death to prove a victory before the Dark One. Egwene took a deep breath and prepared to return to the fighting. She hesitated, however, thinking of Perrin's appearance. He'd acted as if she were a novice. How had he grown so confident, so strong? She hadn't been surprised by the things he'd done so much as by the fact that he had been the one doing them. His appearance was a lesson. Egwene had to be very careful not to rely on her weaves. Bear couldn't channel, but she was as effective as the others. However, it did seem that for some things, weaves were better. Blowing the wall outward, for instance, had seemed easier with a weave than by imagining it, where imposing her will against so large and thick a surface might have been difficult. She was Aes Sedai, and she was a dreamer. She had to use both. Egwene cautiously sent herself back to the room where she'd seen Messana. It was empty, though the wall was still rubble. Blasts sounded from the right, and Egwene peeked around. Balls of fire shot back and forth in that direction, weaves flying in the air. Egwene sent herself behind one of the fighting groups and created a thick cylinder of glass around her for protection. The tower was broken and scarred here, the walls smoldering. Egwene caught sight of one figure stooping beside a section of rubble, wearing a blue dress. Nicola? Egwene thought with anger. How did she get here? I thought I could trust her now. The fool girl must have gotten a dream Turangreal from one of the others who had awakened. Egwene prepared to jump over and send the girl away, but the ground suddenly ripped up beneath Nicola, fire blazing. Nicola screamed as she was tossed into the air, bits of molten rock spraying around her. Egwene yelled, sending herself there, imagining a strong wall of stone beneath Nicola. The girl fell and landed on it, bloodied, eyes unseeing. Egwene cursed, kneeling. The girl wasn't breathing. No, Egwene said.
Egwene Alvir, beware!
Milane's voice. Egwene turned with alarm as a wall appeared beside her, made of thick granite, blocking several blasts of fire that had come from behind. Milane appeared next to Egwene, dressed all in black, her very skin colored dark. She'd been hiding in the shadows beside the hallway.
This place grows too dangerous for you,
Milane said. Leave it to us. Egwene looked down. Nicola's corpse faded away. Foolish child. She peeked around the wall to see two black sisters, Elviarin and Ramala, standing back to back and sending destructive weaves in different directions. There was a room behind them. Egwene could do as she had several times before, jumping into the room, destroying the wall, and hitting the two of them. Foolish child, Bear had said. Your pattern is obvious. That was what Messaana wanted her to do. The two black sisters were bait. Egwene jumped into the room but put her back to the wall. She emptied her mind, waiting, tense. Messaana appeared as she had before. That swirling black cloth was impressive, but it was also foolish. It took thought to maintain. Egwene stared into the woman's surprised eyes and saw the weaves the woman had prepared. Those will not hit me, Egwene thought, confident. The White Tower was hers. Messaana and her minions had invaded, killing Nicola, Siobhan, and Carlinia. Weaves shot forward, but they bent around Egwene. In a moment, Egwene was wearing the clothing of a wise one. White blouse, brown skirt, shawl on her shoulders. She imagined a spear in her hand, an Aiel's spear, and she threw it with a precise motion. The spear pierced the weaves of fire and air, blasting them away, then hit something thick, a wall of air before Messaana. Egwene refused to allow it. That wall didn't belong here. It did not exist. The spear stopped slowing and shot forward, taking Messaana in the neck. The woman's eyes opened wide and she slumped backward, blood spurting from the wound. The black strips swirling around her vanished completely, as did the dress. So it had been a weave. Messaana's darkened face turned into that of Katerina? Egwene frowned. Messaana had been Katerina all along? But she'd been black and fled the tower. She hadn't remained, and that meant no, Egwene thought. I've been had. She's a— At that moment, Egwene felt something snap around her neck. Something cold and metallic. Something familiar and terrifying. The source fled her in a moment, for she was no longer authorized to hold it. She spun in terror. A woman with chin-length dark hair and deep blue eyes stood beside her. She did not look very imposing, but she was very strong in the power. And her wrist held a bracelet, connected by a leash to the band around Egwene's neck. An Adam. Excellent, Messaana said. Such unruly children you are. She clicked her tongue in disapproval. In a moment she shifted somewhere else, taking Egwene with her. A chamber with no windows, looking as if it were cut directly from stone. There wasn't even a doorway. Alviarin waited here, wearing a dress of white and red. The woman immediately knelt before Messaana, though she spared a satisfied glance for Egwene. Egwene barely noticed. She stood, stiff, a tide of panicked thoughts flooding her mind. She was trapped again. She could not stand it. She would die before she allowed this to happen. Images flashed in her head. Trapped in a room, unable to move more than a few feet without being overcome by the Adam. Treated like an animal, a creeping sense that she would eventually break, would eventually become exactly what they wanted her to be. Oh, light. She could not suffer this again. Not this. Tell those above to withdraw, Messaana was saying to Alviarin, her voice calm. Egwene barely registered the words. Fools they are, and their showing here was pathetic. Punishments will be administered. This was how Mogadin had been captured by Nynaeve and Elaine. She was kept captive, forced to do as they demanded. Egwene would suffer the same. Indeed, Messaana would probably use compulsion on her. The White Tower would be fully in the hands of the Forsaken. The emotions welled up. Egwene found herself clawing at the collar, which got a look of amusement from Massana as Alviarin vanished to relay her order. This could not be happening. It was a nightmare. You are Aes Sedai. A quiet piece of her whispered the words. Yet for all their softness, they were strong, and they were deep within her. The voice was deeper than the terror and fear. Now, Massana said, we will speak of the dream, Spike. Where might I find it? An Aes Sedai is calmness. An Aes Sedai is control, regardless of the situation. Egwene lowered her hands from the collar. She had not gone through the testing, and she had not planned to. But if she had, what if she had been forced to face a situation like this? Would she have broken, proven herself unworthy of the mantle she claimed to carry? Not speaking, I see, Massana said. Well, that can be changed. These Adam, such lovely devices. Semirag was so delightfully wonderful in bringing them to my attention, even if she did so accidentally. Pity she died before I could place one on her neck. Pain shot through Egwene's body like fire beneath her skin. Her eyes watered from it. But she had suffered pain before and laughed while being beaten. She had been captive before in the White Tower itself, and captivity had not stopped her. But this is different. The larger part of her was terrified. This is the Adam. I cannot withstand it. An Aes Sedai must, the quiet piece of her replied. An Aes Sedai can suffer all things, for only then can she be truly a servant of all. Now, Massana said, tell me where you have hidden the device. Egwene controlled her fear. It was not easy. Light, but it was hard. But she did it. Her face became calm. She defied the Adam by not giving it power over her. Massana hesitated, frowning. She shook the leash, and more pain flooded Egwene. She made it vanish. It occurs to me, Massana, Egwene said calmly, that Mogadine made a mistake. She accepted the Adam. What are you in this place? An Adam is as meaningless as the weaves it prevents, Egwene said. It is only a piece of metal, and it only will stop you if you accept that it will. The Adam unlocked and fell free of her neck. Massana glanced at it as it dropped to the ground with a metallic ring. Her face grew still, then cold as she looked up at Egwene. Impressively, she did not panic. She folded her arms, eyes impassive. So, you have practiced here. Egwene met her gaze. You are still a child, Massana said. You think that you can best me? I have walked in Telaranriad longer than you can imagine. You are what, 20 years old?
I am the Amerlin, Egwene said.
An Amerlin to children.
An Amerlin to a tower that has stood for thousands of years, Egwene said. Thousands of years of trouble and chaos. Yet most of your life you lived in a time of peace, not strife. Curious that you should think yourself so strong when much of your life was so easy.
Easy, Massana said. You know nothing.
Neither broke her gaze. Egwene felt something press against her, as it had before. Massana's will demanding her subservience, her supplication, an attempt to use Telaranriad to change the very way that Egwene thought. Massana was strong, but strength in this place was a matter of perspective. Massana's will pressed against her, but Egwene had defeated the Adam. She could resist this.
You will bend, Massana said quietly.
You are mistaken, Egwene replied, voice tense. This is not about me. Egwene Alvir is a child, but the Amyrlin is not. I may be young, but the seat is ancient.
Neither woman looked away. Egwene began to push back, to demand that Massana bow before her, before the Amyrlin. The air began to feel heavy around them, and when Egwene breathed it in, it seemed thick somehow.
Age is irrelevant, Egwene said. To an extent, even experience is irrelevant. This place is about what a person is. The Amyrlin is the White Tower, and the White Tower will not bend. It defies you, Massana, and your lies.
Two women, gazes matched. Egwene stopped breathing. She did not need to breathe. All was focused on Massana. Sweat trickled down Egwene's temples, every muscle in her body tense as she pushed back against Massana's will. And Egwene knew that this woman, this creature, was an insignificant insect shoving against an enormous mountain. That mountain would not move. Indeed, shove against it too hard, and something snapped softly in the room. Egwene breathed in with a gasp as the air returned to normal. Massana dropped like a doll made of strips of cloth. She hit the ground with her eyes still open, and a little bit of spittle dribbled out of the corner of her mouth. Egwene sat down, dazed, breathing in and out in gasps. She looked to the side where the Adam lay discarded. It vanished. Then she looked back at Massana, who lay in a heap. Her chest was still rising and lowering, but she stared with sightless eyes. Egwene lay for a long moment recovering before standing and embracing the source. She wove lines of air to lift the unresponsive Forsaken, then shifted both herself and the woman back to the upper floors of the tower. Women turned toward her with a start. The hallway here was strewn with rubble, but everyone Egwene saw was one of hers. The wise ones, spinning on her, Nynaeve picking through some rubble, Swan and Lyanna, the latter bearing several blackened cuts on her face but looking unhurt.
Mother, Swan said with relief. We had feared.
Who is that? Milane asked, walking up to Massana, hanging limply in the weaves of air and staring at the ground. The woman cooed suddenly, like a child, eyes watching a bit of burning fire on the remnants of a tapestry.
It is her, Egwene said, tired.
Massana.
Milane turned to Egwene, eyes wide with surprise.
Light, Lyanna exclaimed. What have you done?
I have seen this before, Bear said, inspecting the woman.
Samana, a wise one dreamer from my youth. She encountered something in the dream that broke her mind.
She hesitated.
She spent the rest of her days in the waking world drooling and needing her linen changed. She never spoke again, at least nothing more than the words of a babe who can barely walk.
Perhaps it is time to stop thinking of you as an apprentice, Egwene Alvir, Amys said.
Nynaeve stood with hands on hips, looking impressed but still clinging to the source. Her braid was full length again in the dream.
The others have gone, she said.
Massana ordered them to flee, Egwene said.
They couldn't have gone far, Swan said. That dome is still there.
Yes, Bear said. But it is time for this battle to end. The enemy has been defeated. We will speak again, Egwene Alvir.
Egwene nodded. I agree on both points.
Bear, Amys, Milane, thank you for your much-needed aid. You have gained much ji in this, and I'm in your debt.
Milane eyed the Forsaken as Egwene sent herself out of the dream.
I believe it is us and the world itself who are in your debt, Egwene Alvir.
The others nodded, and as Egwene faded from Telaran Riod, she heard Bear muttering,
Such a shame she didn't return to us.
Perrin ran through crowds of terrified people in a burning city. Tarvalin. A flame. The very stones burned, the sky a deep red. The ground trembled like a wounded buck kicking as a leopard bled its neck. Perrin stumbled as a chasm opened before him, flames blazing upward, singeing the hairs on his arms. People screamed as some fell into the terrible rift, burning away into nothing. Bodies suddenly littered the ground. To his right, a beautiful building with arched windows began to melt, the rock turning liquid, lava bleeding from between stones and out of openings. Perrin climbed to his feet. It's not real.
Tarmangaiden, people yelled. The last battle has come. It ends. Light, it ends.
Perrin stumbled, pulling himself up against a chunk of rock, trying to stand. His arm hurt and his fingers wouldn't grip. But the worst wound was in his leg where the arrow had hit. His trousers and coat were wet with blood and the scent of his own terror was powerful in his nose. He knew this nightmare was not real. And yet how could one not feel the horror of it? To the west, Dragon Mount was erupting, plumes of angry smoke billowing into the sky. The entire mountain seemed aflame, rivers of red surging down its sides. Perrin could feel it shaking, dying. Buildings cracked, trembled, melted, shattered. People died, crushed by stones or burned to death. No, he would not be drawn in. The ground around him changed from broken cobbles to neat tiles, the servants' entrance to the White Tower. Perrin forced himself to his feet, creating a staff to use in limping. He didn't destroy the nightmare. He had to find Slayer. In this terrible place, Perrin might be able to gain an advantage. Slayer was very practiced in Telaranriad, but perhaps, if Perrin had luck on his side, the man was skilled enough to have avoided nightmares in the past. Perhaps he would be startled by this one, taken in. Reluctantly, Perrin weakened his resolve, letting himself be drawn into the nightmare. Slayer would be close. Perrin stumbled across the street, staying far from the building with the lava boiling from its windows. It was hard to keep himself from giving in to the screams of horror and pain, the calls for help. There, Perrin thought, reaching an alley. Slayer stood inside, head bowed, a hand up against one wall. The ground beside the man ended in a rift, boiling magma at the bottom. People clung to the edge of the gap, screaming. Slayer ignored them. Where his hand touched the wall, it started to change from whitewashed brick to the gray stone of the White Tower's interior. The Tirangreal still hung at Slayer's waist. Perrin had to move quickly. The wall is melting from the heat, Perrin thought, focusing on the wall beside Slayer. It was easier here to change things like that. It was playing into the world the nightmare created. Slayer cursed, pulling his hand back as the wall grew red hot. The ground beneath him rumbled, and his eyes opened wide in alarm. He spun as a rift opened beside him, projected there by Perrin. In that moment, Perrin saw that Slayer believed, for just a fraction of a second, that the nightmare was real. Slayer stepped away from the rift, raising a hand against its heat, believing it real. Slayer vanished in the blink of an eye, appearing beside those hanging above the rift. The nightmare incorporated him, sucking him into its whims, making him play a role in its terrors. It nearly took Perrin, too. He felt himself waver, nearly responding to the heat. But no, Hopper was dying. He would not fail. Perrin imagined himself as someone else. Aziel Thone, one of the Two Rivers men. Perrin put himself in clothing like that he'd seen on the street, a vest and a white shirt, finer trousers than any man would wear while working in Emmons Field. This step was almost too much for him. His heart beat faster, and he stumbled as the ground rumbled. If he let himself be caught up completely in the nightmare, he'd end up like Slayer. No, Perrin thought, forcing himself to hold to his memory of Fael in his heart. His home. His face might change, the world might shake, but that was still home. He ran to the edge of the rift, above the heat, acting as if he were just another part of the nightmare. He screamed in terror, reaching down to help those who were falling. Though he reached for someone else, Slayer cursed and grabbed his arm, using it to heave himself upward. And as he passed, Perrin grabbed the Tirangrial. Slayer crawled over him, reaching the relative safety of the alley. Covertly, Perrin made a knife in his other hand.
"Burn me," Slayer growled. "I hate these things."
The area around them suddenly changed to tiles. Perrin stood up, holding a staff to steady himself, and trying to appear terrified. It wasn't hard. He began to stumble past Slayer. In that moment, the hard-faced man looked down and saw the Tirangrial in Perrin's fingers. His eyes opened wide. Perrin rammed his hand forward, plunging the knife into Slayer's stomach. The man screamed, lurching backward, hand to his belly. Blood soaked his fingers. Slayer clenched his teeth. The nightmare bent around him. It would burst soon. Slayer righted himself, lowering his bloodied hand, eyes alight with anger. Perrin felt unsteady on his feet, even with the staff. He'd been wounded so badly. The ground trembled. A rift opened in the ground next to him, steaming with heat and lava, like... Perrin started.
Like Dragon Mount.
He looked down at the Tirangrial in his fingers.
"The fear dreams of people are strong,"
Opera's voice whispered in Perrin's mind.
"So very strong."
As Slayer advanced on him, Perrin gritted his teeth and hurled the Tirangrial into the river of lava.
"No!"
Slayer screamed, reality returning around him. The nightmare burst, its last vestiges vanishing. Perrin was left kneeling on the cold, tiled floor of a small hallway. A short distance to his right, a melted lump of metal lay on the ground. Perrin smiled. Like Slayer, the Tirangrial was here from the real world, and like a person, it could be broken and destroyed here. Above them, the violet dome had vanished. Slayer growled, then stepped forward and kicked Perrin in the stomach. His chest wound flared. Another kick followed. Perrin was growing dizzy.
"Go, young bull,"
Hopper sent, his voice weak.
"Flee. I can't leave you. And yet, I must leave you."
"No."
"You have found your answer. Seek Boundless. He will explain that answer."
Perrin blinked through tears as another kick landed. He screamed, raggedly, as Hopper's sending, so comforting, so familiar, faded from his mind. Gone. Perrin screamed in anguish. Voice ragged, eyes stained with tears, Perrin willed himself out of the wolf dream and away, fleeing like an utter coward.
Egwene awoke with a sigh. Eyes still closed, she breathed in. The battle with Messana had left her mind feeling strained. Indeed, she had a splitting headache. She had quite nearly been defeated there. Her plans had worked, but the weight of what had happened left her feeling contemplative, even a little overwhelmed. Still, it had been a great victory. She would have to do a search of the White Tower and find the woman who, when awakened, now had the mind of a child. She knew somehow that this was not something Messana would recover from. She'd known it even before Bear had spoken her words. Egwene opened her eyes to a comfortably dark room, making plans to gather the hall and explain why Siobhan and Carlinia would never awaken. She spared a moment to mourn for them as she sat up. She'd explained to them the dangers, but still she felt as if she'd failed them. And Nicola, always trying to go faster than she should. She shouldn't have been there. Egwene hesitated. What was that smell? Hadn't she left a lamp burning? It must have gone out. Egwene embraced the source and wove a ball of light to hang above her hand. She was stunned by the scene it revealed. The translucent curtains of her bed had been sprayed red with blood, and five bodies littered the floor. Three were in black, One was an unfamiliar young man in the tabard of the Tower Guard. The last wore a fine white and red coat and trousers. Gawain! Egwene threw herself from the bed and knelt beside him, ignoring the pain of her headache. He was breathing shallowly and had a gaping wound in his side. She wove earth, spirit, and air into a healing, but she was far from talented in this area. She worked on, in a panic. Some of his color returned and the wounds began to close, but she couldn't do nearly enough. Help! She yelled. The Ammerlin needs help! Gawain stirred. Egwene, he whispered, his eyes fluttering open. Hush, Gawain. You're going to be fine. Aid! To the Ammerlin!
You didn't leave enough lights on, he whispered.
What?
The message I sent.
We never got a message, she said. Be still. Help!
Nobody is near. I yelled. The lamps. It is good you didn't.
He smiled dazedly.
I love you.
Lie still, she said. Light, she was crying.
The assassins weren't your forsaken, though, he said, words slurring. I was right.
And he had been. What were those unfamiliar black uniforms? Seanchan? I should be dead, she realized. If Gawain hadn't stopped these assassins, she'd have been murdered in her sleep and would have vanished from Telaran Riod. She'd never have killed Masaana. Suddenly she felt a fool, any sense of victory completely evaporating.
I'm sorry, Gawain said, closing his eyes, for disobeying you.
He was slipping. It's all right, Gawain, she said, blinking away tears. I'm going to bond you now. It's the only way. His grip on her arm became slightly more firm.
No, not unless you want.
Fool, she said, preparing the weaves. Of course I want you as my warder. I always have.
Swear it.
I swear it. I swear that I want you as my warder and as my husband. She rested her hand on his forehead and laid the weave on him. I love you. He gasped. Suddenly she could feel his emotions and his pain, as if they were her own, and in return she knew that he could feel the truth of her words.
Perrin opened his eyes and took a deep breath. He was crying. Did people cry in their sleep when they dreamed normal dreams?
Light be praised,
Fael said. He opened his eyes and found that she knelt next to him, as did someone else. Masuri? The Aes Sedai grabbed Perrin's head in her hands, and Perrin felt the icy cold of a healing wash across him. The wounds in his leg and across his chest closed.
We tried to heal you while you slept, Fael said, cradling Perrin's head in her lap. But Adara stopped us.
It is not done. Wouldn't work anyway.
That was the Wise One's voice. Perrin could hear her in the tent somewhere. He blinked his eyes. He lay on his pallet. It was dim outside.
It's been longer than an hour, he said. You should have left by now.
Hush, Fael said. Gateways are working again and almost everyone is through. Only a few thousand soldiers remain. Aiel and Two Rivers men, mostly. You think they'd leave? You think I'd leave without you?
He sat up, wiping his brow. It was damp with sweat. He tried to make it vanish as he had in the wolf dream. He failed, of course. Adara stood by the far wall behind him. She watched him with a measuring gaze. He turned to Fael.
We have to get away, he said, voice ragged. Slayer will not be working alone. There will be a trap. Probably an army. Someone with an army. They might try to strike at any moment.
Can you stand? Fael asked.
Yes.
He felt weak, but he managed with Fael's help. The flap rustled and Chiad entered with a water skin. Perrin took it gratefully, drinking. It slaked his thirst, but pain still burned inside of him.
Hopper. He lowered the waterskin. In the wolf dream, death was final. Where would Hopper's soul go?
I must keep going, Perrin thought. See my people to safety.
He walked to the tent flaps. His legs were already more steady.
I see your sorrow, my husband, Fael said, walking beside him, hand on his arm. What happened?
I lost a friend, Perrin said softly. For the second time.
Hopper?
She smelled fearful.
Yes.
Oh, Perrin, I'm sorry.
Her voice was tender as they stepped out of the tent. It stood, alone, on the meadow that had once held his forces. The brown and yellow grass still bore the impressions of tents, paths worn down to the mud in a large crisscross pattern. It looked like a layout for a town, sections stamped down for buildings, lines cut to become roadways. But it was nearly empty of people now. The rumbling sky was dark. Chiad held a lantern up to illuminate the grass in front of them. Several groups of soldiers waited. Maidens raised their spears high when they saw him, then banged them on their shields, a sign of approval. The Two Rivers men were there as well, gathering around as word spread. How much could they guess of what he'd done tonight? Two Rivers men cheered, and Perrin nodded to them, though he felt on edge. The wrongness was still there, in the air. He'd assumed that the dream spike was causing it, but he had apparently been wrong. The air smelled like the blight. The Ashaman stood where the center of the camp had once stood. They turned when Perrin approached, saluting, hands to chests. They looked to be in good shape, despite just having moved almost the entire camp.
Get us out of here, men, Perrin said to them. I don't want to spend another minute in this place.
Yes, my lord,
Grady said, sounding eager. He got a look of concentration on his face, and a small gateway opened beside him.
Through,
Perrin said, waving to the Two Rivers men. They crossed with a quick step. The maidens in Gaul waited with Perrin, as did Elias.
Light, Perrin thought, scanning the field where they'd camped. I feel like a mouse being eyed by a hawk.
I don't suppose you could give us some light, Perrin said to Niald, standing beside the gateway.
The Ashaman cocked his head, and a group of glowing globes appeared around him. They zipped up into the air around the meadow. They illuminated nothing, just the abandoned campsite. The last of his troops finally filed through. Perrin and Fael crossed, Gaul, Elias, and the maidens going after him. Finally, the channelers passed through, walking in a cluster. The air on the other side of the gateway was cool and smelled refreshingly clean. Perrin hadn't realized how much the evil smell had been bothering him. He inhaled deeply. They were on a rise, some distance from a splash of lights beside the river that was probably Whitebridge. His troops cheered as he stepped through. The great camp was already mostly set up, guard posts in place. The gateway had been opened into a large area, marked off with posts, near the back.
They'd escaped. The cost had been great, but they'd escaped.
Grendahl sat back in her chair. The leather cushions were stuffed with the down of the fledgling Kalir, which during this age lived only in Shara. She barely noticed the luxury. The servant, one Moradin had loaned her, was on one knee before her. His eyes were tempestuous and only half lowered. This one was under control, but barely. He knew he was unique. He also seemed to know that his failure would fall upon her shoulders. Grendahl did not sweat. She was too controlled for that. The shutters on the window in the wide, red-tiled room burst open suddenly, a cold sea wind blowing through the chamber and putting out several of the lamps. Tendrils of smoke wove up from their wicks. She would not fail. Prepare to spring the trap anyway, she commanded. But, the servant said, do it, and do not speak back to one of the chosen dog. The servant lowered his eyes, though there was still a rebellious spark to them. Never mind. She still had one tool left to her, one she had positioned so very carefully, one she had prepared for a moment such as this. It had to be done carefully. Ebara was Taviran, and so strongly one as to be frightening. Arrows fired from afar would miss, and in a time of peaceful contemplation he would be alerted and escape. She needed a tempest with him at the center of it, and then the blade would fall. This is not done yet, fallen blacksmith. Not by an inch or by a league.